Satra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are not just exploring a habitat, we're diving into a real paradox. We're looking at coral reefs, you know, arguably Earth's most spectacularly complex, ancient, and productive ecosystems, which are at the same time among the most dangerously fragile systems on the planet.
Exactly. And we're using Professor Charles Shepard's, well, really seminal work, Coral Reefs, Complexity, Crisis, and Conservation, as our guide today. Our mission, really, is to move past just the beautiful image of the reef to understand the critical scientific mechanics that make them function and why getting a grip on their biology is now essential to understanding just how urgent this crisis is.
It really is a study in contrast, isn't it? Yeah. You hear the comparison all the time, but the numbers are just staggering. Coral reefs is the rainforest of the sea. They cover, what, less than 1% of the entire ocean floor.
Tiny fraction.
Yet somehow, they support about 25% of all known marine species.
It's amazing. That extraordinary concentration of life. Well, it makes them irreplaceable. And Shepard argues this intensity means reefs function as a crucial indicator, a kind of barometer for the planet's environmental well-being, as he puts it.
A barometer.
Yeah, like that. If the reefs fail, it's signaling a systemic breakdown that impacts the whole ocean and, critically, us, human populations.
Okay, before we really dive into the science, let's establish why Professor Shepard is the guide we trust here. Who is he, and you know, what gives his work such authority?
Well, Professor Charles Shepard is a professor emeritus of marine sciences at the University of Warwick. But his authority, I'd say, is really founded in the fieldwork, not just the title. We're talking over four decades of intensive boots-on-the-ground research.
Wow.
Across pretty much all the major global reef systems, the Red Sea, the vast Indian Ocean, the Caribbean, he's been there.
A four-decade perspective.
Yeah.
That's invaluable, especially when things are changing so fast. He hasn't just crunched the numbers. He's actually seen the system shift over time.
Right.
Witnessed the beauty, yes, but also the, well, the alarming degradation firsthand.
That's the crucial thing. He really acts as this bridge between the hard science and, you know, public understanding and advocacy. He gives us the raw data, but also those firsthand accounts of decline. A perfect example of his insight comes from his research way out in the Chagos Archipelago.
Okay, that's that remote, largely pristine system in the Indian Ocean, right?
Exactly. You'd think if anywhere was safe, it'd be there. It's a huge marine protected area, minimal local stress.
So it should be buffered.
You'd assume so. But Chagas suffered a devastating, really severe mass bleaching event, which proved that global warming, the fever, as he sometimes calls it, is now the dominant pressure. It just overwhelmed even the most geographically isolated, best protected reefs.
That's sobering.
It leads to his unavoidable conclusion. We just can't save reefs through local action alone if global temperatures keep climbing like this.
Okay, right. Let's unpack the book itself then. Shepard's core aim seems to be demystifying the reefs, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Taking us from seeing this beautiful underwater garden to recognizing this incredibly complex, dynamic, and yes, fragile ecosystem that's just fundamental to ocean health.
Absolutely. And the central premise is this. Reefs are, historically speaking, incredibly robust systems. I mean, they've survived mass extinctions over hundreds of millions of years. But, and this is the key distinction, the past events happened over vast geological timescales.
Giving life time to adapt, to move.
Exactly. Time to evolve. So the current crisis, what defines it is the velocity, the sheer speed of the threat, not just its magnitude.
Ah, okay. So it's the pace of human-induced climate change that's a real problem.
Precisely. It's just unprecedented. It's overwhelming the coral's natural adaptive capacity. So Shepard argues that effective conservation needs us to integrate three things: a deep grasp of their biology, a quantified value of their services, what they do for us, and an urgent response to the speed of these global threats.
Got it.
The book really takes us from the microscopic level, the individual coral polyp, right up to the scale of global climate policy.
So let's start there at the beginning. At that microscopic level where, well, the magic happens, we often forget corals are actually animals, right? Polyps, related to jellyfish.
Yeah, tiny little animals. And the entire vast structure they build, this incredible architecture, it all hinges on a partnership.
A symbiosis.
One of nature's most effective partnerships.
Symbiosis.
The coral polyp hosts these microscopic algae called zooxanthellae right inside its tissues. And this is the solar-powered engine of the whole reef system.
Solar-powered. So the algae photosynthesize, like plants do on land, and provide, what, up to 90% of the coral's energy needs?
up to 90%. It's an incredibly efficient food production system, and it's what allows life to just explode in these otherwise quite nutrient-poor tropical waters.
And all that energy lets the coral do its main job, building its home.
Exactly. That massive energy supply allows the coral to perform the equally massive task of calcification. They pull calcium and carbonate ions out of the seawater and secrete their hard, white calcium carbonate skeleton. That's the limestone structure the reef is built on.
Which is why Shepard says, so elegantly, the coral organism is an animal that has learned to garden.
It's a perfect description, isn't it? It captures that efficiency.
And as generations of these polyps build their skeletons one on top of the other, we get the major reef types we recognize. The fringing reefs close to shore, the big barrier reefs further out, and those amazing ring-shaped atolls.
Which Darwin figured out, yeah, forming around sinking volcanic islands, just incredible geological processes over millennia.
Okay, so that's the foundation. Now let's connect that biology to the bigger picture, the why they matter part. Shepard frames reefs not just as beautiful, but as critical living infrastructure for humanity.
Mm-hmm. Essential infrastructure. Their economic and social value is just immense, though often hidden.
This is where those ecosystem services come in. And the numbers are pretty stark. First up, coastal protection. We spend fortunes on seawalls, but reefs are these natural self-repairing breakwaters.
And they are incredibly effective. The data shows reefs can absorb and dissipate up to 97% of incoming wave energy. Think about that during a hurricane or a major storm surge.
97%. Wow.
They literally save coastlines, property, and lives from erosion and catastrophic flooding. It's a massive, usually uncounted natural subsidy.
Huge. And the second big service, they're vital food sources and support livelihoods. They act as nurseries for countless fish species.
Yeah, the fish connection is huge.
Providing protein and income for, what's the estimate? Something like 500 million people worldwide, mostly in the tropics.
500 million people. So losing a reef isn't just an ecological tragedy. It's an immediate humanitarian and economic crisis for those communities.
And nowhere is that biodiversity, that dependence, more intense than the Coral Triangle in Southeast Asia, right?
That's the global hotspot. Spanning 6 countries, it's the epicenter of marine biodiversity. And its very existence is completely dependent on healthy coral infrastructure.
Which takes us inevitably to the crisis. We know the reef relies on this delicate, handshake between the coral animal and the algae. So what happens when we pump massive amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere and oceans? Shepard calls it the 1-2 punch.
Yeah. The first punch is the one we see most dramatically. Ocean warming and coral bleaching. It doesn't take much. When water temperatures rise just 1 or 2 degrees Celsius above the normal summer maximum and stay there for a few weeks.
Just 1 or 2 degrees.
That's often enough. The coral gets stressed, and under stress, the polyp actually expels its zooxanthellae, its tenants, its food source.
And that's when it loses its color, revealing the stark white skeleton underneath. That's the bleaching.
Exactly. The coral isn't necessarily dead at that point, but it's essentially starving. It's lost up to 90% of its food supply. If the water temperature doesn't drop back down relatively quickly, the coral will die, and then the skeleton gets overgrown by, you know, turf algae. That's the rapid, visible sickness of the ocean.
Okay, that's punch number one, heat stress. What's the second punch? You mentioned chemistry.
Right, the second punch is more insidious, maybe less visible immediately. Ocean acidification. This is the other CO2 problem.
Okay.
As the ocean absorbs all that extra atmospheric CO2, the water's pH drops. It becomes more acidic. Now, this change in chemistry reduces the availability of carbonate ions in the water.
And carbonate ions are the literal building blocks the corals need to make their skeletons.
Precisely. So acidification makes the actual construction process, the calcification, much harder. They have to expend significantly more energy to build their skeletons, and the raw materials are scarcer.
So it's not just the heat stressing them out. The water itself is becoming chemically hostile to their very structure.
Yes, it's a continuous slow drain. Acidification slows down their growth rates. It weakens the entire reef structure, makes it more brittle, more vulnerable to storm damage, erosion, the works.
Wow.
And what Shepard really emphasizes is how we have to think about these huge global problems, warming and acidification interacting with the local pressures too.
Right. Things like pollution, nutrient runoff from farms, sewage, sediment washing off the land from construction.
Exactly. And crucially, overfishing, especially the removal of herbivores like parrotfish.
The grazers?
Yeah, the lawnmowers of the reef. If you take them out, seaweed and algae can just bloom and smother the corals, especially corals already weakened by heat or pollution. This leads to the critical insight about synergism.
Okay, explain that. Why does that local weakness matter so much when the global temperature rise seems like the, you know, the overwhelming threat anyway?
Because a reef that's already stressed by, say, local sewage pollution or too much sediment in the water is far, far less likely to survive a global bleaching event when it hits.
It has less resilience.
Precisely. It has less capacity to cope. The threats amplify each other. It's like a patient who's already battling an infection suddenly getting hit with a really high fever. Their chances are much worse. It connects back to that Chagos example. Even pristine reefs are struggling with the fever, but locally stressed reefs have almost no chance.
It's that connection. It makes the conservation challenge seem almost overwhelming, but also incredibly urgent.
Okay, so pulling this together, what are the, say, three core takeaways for us, the learners, from Shepherd's huge body of work?
Okay, first, I'd say it's that paradox of resilience and vulnerability. Yes, reefs survived the dinosaurs, they are ancient and have bounced back before, but the speed, the velocity of modern human-caused change is the enemy. It's outpacing their evolutionary capacity to adapt.
Right, speed kills in this context. Okay, takeaway two.
Second, the absolutely critical importance of that symbiosis, that partnership between the tiny polyp animal and the microscopic algae, the entire vast ecosystem, the structure visible from space, fundamentally rests on that fragile microscopic handshake.
When that partnership breaks down bleaching, the whole edifice is threatened. It really underscores how interconnected and sometimes how delicate large ecosystems can be.
Such a tiny engine driving such a massive system. Okay, and the third key theme.
And third, I think, is the inescapable link between global connectivity and local specificity. Reef systems are different around the world, right? They need tailored local management, protecting those parrotfish, cleaning up sewage outflows. That's vital.
What?
But their ultimate fate, their long-term survival, is being determined by global climate processes, by CO2 emissions happening thousands of miles away. So we need integrated management, action at all scales, from the local community right up to international agreements.
That third theme really lands hard because it ties reef protection directly back to human welfare, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not some niche environmental issue for divers. It's fundamentally linked to food security, economic stability, coastal safety for millions and millions of people.
Absolutely. And Shepherd has some wonderfully memorable ways of phrasing these complex ideas. We already mentioned that great one about the coral being an animal that has learned to garden.
Yeah, I love that. Another beautiful concept he shares is describing reefs as libraries of geological and evolutionary information.
That's good too.
Like natural archives, right? Built layer by layer over millennia, holding clues about Earth's past climate, past sea levels. A record we're now risk losing.
Exactly. And the phrase that really captures the synergism we talked about, the combination of threats, is simply, local threats and global warming form a deadly combination. Short, sharp, true.
And the one that acts as the ultimate call to action, building on what you said about Chagos and the fever.
Yes, the fever analogy.
He basically says, local protection is like treating the symptoms of a patient with a raging fever. Unless we tackle the fever itself, the warming of the planet, the patient will not survive.
It's powerful, isn't it? Because it clarifies the priorities. Yes, local actions like MPAs and pollution control are essential. They buy time. They build resilience.
But they won't solve the underlying problem if the planet keeps heating up.
Exactly. It demands global climate action.
Okay, so this scientific understanding, it actually gives us practical ways to apply this knowledge in our own lives, doesn't it?
It really does. On a personal level, just understanding that connection between your own carbon footprint and ocean temperature can be motivating. Thinking about energy consumption, travel choices, consumer habits, it all adds up, you know?
And it translates directly into responsible tourism if you're lucky enough to visit a coastal area.
Yeah.
Simple things, like using reef-safe sunscreen. Many common sunscreens contain chemicals, like oxybenzone, octinoxate.
Yeah, those are known coral toxins.
They actually harm the algae and make corals more susceptible to bleaching. So choosing mineral-based sunscreens like zinc oxide makes a difference.
Absolutely. And just basic stuff in the water. Maintain good buoyancy if you're diving or snorkeling. Don't touch the coral. Don't kick it with your fins. It's fragile. It can take decades to recover from physical damage. And it should go without saying, never, ever buy souvenirs made from coral.
Definitely not. And then on a larger scale, this kind of knowledge, the science in Shepherd's book, it arms you for policy discussions, for advocacy. It gives you the why behind supporting things like marine protected areas or pushing governments, local, national, international, for real, measurable climate action.
Fundamentally, the book shifts our view, I think, from seeing reefs as just, you know, beautiful, distant, natural wonders,
right,
to recognizing them as a critical, deeply threatened part of our global life support system, one that demands urgent attention at absolutely every level.
You know, what really struck me most after absorbing all this is that sheer scale of the problem, global oceans warming, changing chemistry, combined with the almost unbelievable fragility of that core biological engine, that tiny polyp algae handshake. It feels like the reef crisis truly is the ultimate canary in the coal mine. It's screaming at us about how fast our planet is changing.
And for me, the ultimate insight is that effective conservation just has to happen simultaneously at multiple scales. Local management dealing with sewage, stopping sediment runoff, protecting key fish that builds essential resilience, it keeps the patient stronger.
Buys time.
It buys time, exactly. But that resilience only goes so far. The long-term fate of coral reefs worldwide depends entirely, inescapably, on humanity's collective ability to coordinate transformative global action. Primarily, that means drastically reducing fossil fuel emissions and stabilizing the climate. There's really no way around it.
A complex problem demanding complex, coordinated solutions. A necessary deep dive into complexity, crisis, and conservation.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.